acknowledge the renaming of I-94 at Cooper Street in honor of three correction officers that had passed. Representative Leitner took the legislation, had moved forward, signed into law by Governor Whitmer. Deputy Gatekeeper George Haight, back in 1893, he was poisoned to death.
We did a story. I've got to do a make good because I knew about Josephine Budd.
Yes.
And McCallum.
Yes. And so that was the third correction officer.
George Haight?
Yes. Yep. He was poisoned, cyanide, by an inmate who had special liberties. So we were able to acknowledge those that serve, our correction officers that serve. Excited to have Director Heidi Washington here. We also recognized the, I did honestly say, completion, and Senator Shirky said, no, not a completion. We're still working on I-94. We still have a lot of work to go. But that portion of the highway has been completed. Continue to move forward as we're looking at the I-94-127 intersection. But we had the opportunity to recognize MDOT and the collaborative efforts between MDOT, townships, county, and the city. We now have on Cooper Street there a beautiful entranceway, gateway into the city of Jackson. So I was excited to be able to bring the city and the county and all the entities, municipalities together to acknowledge the work that's been done thus far with MDOT. And we had the director of MDOT in Jackson as well.
Fantastic. So unsafe out there.
Mm-hmm. A lot of improvements definitely need to be made. And then they had the challenges with the coal mines there at that intersection. So it was a combination, acknowledging the progress on the road construction and also acknowledging our correction officers. Greg, what really touched my heart, though, was all three families of the fallen officers had family members there. So all three of those individuals, they drove from all over the state, and it was the great-great-granddaughter of Deputy Haight. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was nice to have them there, and it was very touching. Everyone that stood up at the podium for speaking just for a minute or so teared up and very heartfelt.
So they had to really appreciate what was happening.
They did. We had the honor guard there presenting the colors, the DOC honor guard, and everyone did. We had a great media presence and just able to take one moment and reflect from a historical perspective what has happened, and again show our appreciation for those that are currently serving in uniform, and also recognize the accomplishments in our roads.
Well, great job. I know you got that signed by Governor Rick.
Yes, I did on the other two from 1987.
So the House wrapped up their business last night?
Yes. We'll
late
be,
night?
Not too bad, but okay. I mean, we started early and it was a long day. A lot of legislation tossed at us. But the most important thing is we have wrapped up our state budget. We are mandated to have it done by October 1st. And I will say, Greg, it was a collaborative effort between the executive branch and our leadership. They were able to come to a consensus on what needs to be done, again, to protect to acknowledge what our priorities are and acknowledge the fact that we need to live within our means right now. The revenue was significantly more than we were predicting 6 months ago. That's a good thing. But we also know that this is so far from behind us that our revenue shortfalls are going to be carrying on over the next few budget seasons, and we need to make sure that we continue to put additional dollars in our rainy day fund, and that's why we end up putting $35 million into that stabilization fund. The important thing here is we are not growing state government. We are not raising taxes. We're living within our means. We are acknowledging and including schools and students, local services and local governments, revenue sharing. None of that was affected in a negative manner. In fact, in some areas, it was even increased. So those were good things, living within our budget.
$62 billion plus. That sounds like a lot.
It sure does. And interestingly enough, it's a quarter of our annual state budget is devoted to K-12 education. That is a lot of money. That in DHHS, our social services. We will continue to make the investments we need. One of the pieces that was really important to me, Greg, and I had my eye on it through the entire process, was the road funding. If you recall back in 2015, before I even served in the legislature, we made a promise that a portion of our general fund would be going to roads, and our local municipalities here in Jackson, I know they bonded with the dollars that were promised. I needed to make sure those dollars were in there so that we could make those bond payments. And again, that was remained in place. We also provided $20 million for PPE for skilled nursing facilities to continue fighting that COVID-19. So there were some areas where there may have been some, you know, new expenses in there related to COVID-19, but because of the federal dollars that came in, that put us in a much better position.
I know, talking to some school officials this week, that they certainly appreciated not taking a haircut here.
We understand these are challenging times, and the other issues, they already has started their school year. I mean, the timing of this budget, it's a challenge for our municipalities and our schools when the state isn't making these decisions till so late in the game. But in this case, it was a card that played out well for them.
So, crystal ball looking at next year.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be past the election. What do you see? What do you foresee? Do you see any enhancements, or,
you know,
is it just going to be a struggle?
It's going to be a struggle. I'm cognizant on a lot of the votes I take, and I'm so grateful. Rep. Leitner serves on appropriations, and I focus on policy. So we've got that team approach going for our Jackson community. We're really cognizant of how we're spending the tax dollars. It reminds me of a family budget. You know, you have some really big expenses coming up. You know, you have a loss of revenue coming up. We know we're not going to be able to continue counting on federal dollars coming in indefinitely. That have helped us
right
through these challenging times. So we need to be cognizant as we're spending tax dollars on the long-term ramifications. We'll see. It's just one of those we'll just take each day. And that's why it's so important we get our economy back going. That's why those that can work safely, those that can operate their businesses, should be allowed to do so, that can do it safely.
So I know you tackled the past couple weeks election integrity.
Yeah, Greg, that's probably the top issue I'm hearing from constituents in over the last couple of weeks, especially with the recent court hearing back on September 18th. The Court of Claims issued an injunction, which modifies a lot of our policies in voting, most specifically that as long as your ballot was postmarked by vote November 2nd, that ballot can be counted up to 14 days, and that changes the way we've been operating for quite some time. People are frustrated with that. I get that. Again, in this specific case, with this court ruling, we are not a party and therefore cannot appeal. We are making those requests. As legislatures, we're doing everything we can to be a part to make sure voter integrity is there and that we have rules and policies. These are frustrating times when courts, to some extent, are acting in a manner that normally the legislature would be. We have three branches. We have the legislative, we have the executive, and we have the judicial. And there is a role for each of those entities. And we need to be cognizant of that. And sometimes I'm sensing courts are overreaching and interpreting and even creating laws. So we continue to be advocates. What we have done, though, although these are challenging times, we did present significant legislation this last week, both in the House and the Senate, to make sure that the election integrity takes place. So we are able to pass legislation. It is my understanding that conversations took place with the governor prior and during this process, and that she will be supportive of the legislation we're putting forward, both, again, in the House and the Senate it has passed. So we should be able to enact this to law.
What does that include?
So there are a variety of things. First of all, we know we're in this position because in November of 2018, the voters of Michigan approved no reason voting. So this is changing the dynamics of voting anymore. The first thing, it would allow the pre-processing of absentee ballots. It does not mean if you're voting with an absentee ballot that they're going to be running those ballots, counting those ballots. It's just a pre-processing. We know they already checked the signature. One of the pieces, a common mistake, is that individuals don't sign the outside envelope to their ballot when they mail it in, and thus that ballot can't be counted, as it shouldn't, because you need to match the signatures to ensure that integrity is taking place. If that signature is not there, if it is prior to the election, that clerk may contact that individual and bring that to their attention. Not the day of the election or after, but if it's just prior. That was one piece we put in place, but with the legislation that we passed, pre-processing of the absentee ballots, again, just the outside, not the actual ballot, but just the outside envelope can be opened. But then we put all of the protective mechanisms in place that have to be done. We want election days to go smoothly, but there's a fine line between what we can and what we should do. And I feel very strongly that we found a happy compromise. You still have to have the transparency. We have to know, the public needs to know if those outside envelopes are going to be opened ahead of time. You still have to have your witnesses there. You have to have someone that can will contest it. You have to have a Republican. You have to have a Democrat. So you have to have a lot of those safety mechanisms in place. Those election inspectors must be there, must be present. We have to have counting boards. So when it comes to election day, a counting board would be allowed to work in shifts. But if you're working on one of those shifts, you cannot go home and then come back. You cannot take information that you may have obtained that day. Let's say turnout's real low, turnout's real high. If you were allowed to leave that secured facility before the end of the day, that would be information that might be shared. So those were pieces. We also made sure that those, as our city of Jackson has, drop boxes, that they're secure, that they've got the regulations, the oversight around them that are needed. So we put that into law. Again, a lot of just common sense things, but by putting it into law, that will help that clarification. I think the other piece that's really important is we have modified some of the law that will create a felony for knowingly providing a false information on your absentee voter application. So if you forge someone's signature or you put inaccurate information on there in a fraudulent manner, you will be held accountable for that. And I think that one is very important that we...
That would be a felony?
Yes. Yeah. And it was in some areas, but some areas, depending on specifically what activity took place with the current legislation, it was just a misdemeanor. So everything is being stepped up. We, again, are allowing the voter counting boards to work in shifts, but we put a lot of parameters around that to maintain the integrity of elections.
What about intimidation at the polling places?
Well, I believe that.
Did you guys address that?
That was not brought up in any specific legislation. We did talk about overseas, our military armed forces. That was part of the conversation with legislation, but not the intimidation piece. Again, our current laws are good in a lot of ways, but we're just tightening things up so that the clarity is there if needed.
So they will be, now, they can't count the ballots the day before, but they can
pre-process. They can open that outside envelope. They're already matching signatures. That's, I get, my understanding is that's the first thing a clerk does when they receive something in the mail. On the outside envelope is a signature. You can make sure that the signatures match.
Check it. Okay.
And then after that, just start the process of opening up the envelopes and the outside envelope. Because think about that. In some communities, some large communities, there are stacks and stacks of those.
There's going to be a lot of absentee voting.
There is. And so we acknowledge the timeliness, but I don't feel comfortable with allowing it to go much further than this because of that integrity piece. So I think we found a compromise. I know the governor was pleased with some of these areas, but I also believe, more importantly, that each and every piece here of the safety mechanisms we put in place will increase voter integrity. So again, we're acknowledging that we're going to have an increase in absentee ballots, but we move forward in a manner that will ensure that safety.
Now, can we scalp tickets at the polling place?
So, assuming the governor signs that, the legislation, we in the House and the Senate pass legislation that allows an individual to resell a ticket at a higher rate than that ticket level, which is referred to as scalping. And up to now, that's been illegal. In many, many other states, almost every state in the nation allows the resale of tickets, and Michigan did not. You could not sell them for more than the face value of the ticket. And if you did, and someone wanted to prosecute, that would be a misdemeanor. So we would now allow, once the governor signs this, it's passed the House and the Senate, but the resale of tickets at a higher value. The other reason I think that's important is with the processing fees that are now placed on ticket sales. You may buy a ticket to a concert, right, for $50, but there could have been a, you know, $5, $7 fee on top of it. And if you wanted to sell that ticket to someone for $57, you would be acting in an illegal manner. So
I don't think they're worried about that.
I don't think it's been highly enforced either. But let's make sure our laws in our state of Michigan reflect what communities want, activities, behavior. The other thing that I was pleased to see in this legislation, it also put significant measures in place to protect the consumers. The consumer protection piece has to be a part of it, because as we know, with technology moving forward, that there are a lot of bad actors out there. And
yeah, the ticket scalping is not me selling Julie a $50 ticket for $100. It's the true scalper hoarding tickets and then, you know, making a huge profit off it.
Exactly. And quite often, they're these deceptive domain names. They're created by third parties.
Yeah.
And they're going to mislead the consumers into thinking they're actually purchasing tickets from an artist or from a venue.
Then there's the complete phony.
Exactly. Ticket. So we put that safety mechanism in place, too. So, again, just protecting consumers.
So you're out of Lansing now. You're back in district.
Correct.
Do you have any hours, or?
I haven't, but I will tell you, I've had someone reach out to me last night that asked us to meet
on.
That does happen occasionally. On Monday, someone asked to meet with me, and I said, absolutely happy to do so. So anyone that would like to meet with me, I am more than happy to meet you. We can meet in a coffee shop. We can meet in a park, whatever your comfort level is. I would suggest scheduling through my office, 517-373-1795. I still, on a daily basis, several every day, unemployment insurance claims. Individuals still not receiving their benefits. So I continue to fight on your behalf there and do all I can to help you navigate this overwhelmed system.
And it's still hard to get into the secretary.
Yes, I get a handful of those calls every day too. Yeah. Again, remember, they open up next day appointments every single day. So your best bet, you're going to go online to schedule an appointment. I understand they're scheduling into January, but
ouch.
If you click the button that says next day appointments, keep trying that because they open up appointments for the very next day. You know, that happens on a routine basis.
Julie, thanks for coming out.
Thank you, Greg.
Appreciate it. State Rep. Julie Alexander.